say. The Western boys cheat and steal. They don't know where they've been. The summer's on its way out. You can see it in the trees. You smile and you whisper, hoping they will all believe. But you're late.
We get the second hour of the program underway, though, this afternoon by welcoming to the program a couple of talented singers and songwriters. They make up Granville Automatic, and they teamed up with writer Brian Allison for a wonderful new book called Hidden History of Music Row. And we are so excited to be joined this afternoon by Elizabeth Elkins and Vanessa Olivares. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. We're glad to be here.
This is such a wonderful read as somebody who's been to Nashville a number of times. I've got a great love for that city and the music it's produced. It's a wonderful story. What led you to tell this hidden history?
Well, you know, we've written a couple records just about lost stories from history, and we were in the middle of making a record in New York when we realized that we had kind of left out the history of the town we were living in and writing in, which was Nashville. And Vanessa had the idea, looking around to see so many things disappearing here in Nashville, that what if we wrote a record about that? That led to a record called Radio Hymns, which, in a strange roundabout way, got to an editor at the History Press. And he came up with the idea that as working songwriters, our perspective on the history of Music Row might be super interesting, and that's how the book happened.
Nobody knows the torture of the music industry like we do.
Well, you've also put together a wonderful EP, and we heard one of the cuts from it, a little bit of Opryland there. The EP is called Tiny Televisions, and it's also another way of telling some of these stories of Nashville.
Exactly. We really wanted to create a musical sort of piece to go along with it. I just feel like, especially today, with the way the music and the book industry are, you have to have one thing supporting another, just to really give it the support and the push that it needs. So I feel like the music fuels the book sales, and the book sales fuels the music.
Vanessa, for anybody who hasn't been to Nashville, they might be surprised to find out that what we think of as Music Row is a pretty small area.
Yes, it's very, very tiny. And people are usually astounded if I ever have any guests come to town when I drive up. Oh, I want to see Music Row. And I drive them down, and they're like, this is it? It's just a bunch of old ranchers and older buildings than that. I mean, unfortunately, they're being destroyed, you know, every second. But hopefully, you know, this book will call a little bit of attention to preservation and hopes of saving these places.
Well, the book begins with the wonderful story of a fur trader who made his way to what's now Nashville. Elizabeth, can you tell us a little bit about Timothy de Mumbrien?
Sure. Timothy was a French fur trader from Quebec. He came down here and was, you know, working his way between this area and New Orleans, making his money, and headed back home sometimes to a wife and family in Kaskaskia, Illinois, which is now under the Mississippi River. He spent a lot of time here before it was Nashville, and he tried to marry a woman here while he was still married to his French wife. And Timothy became very instrumental in the beginning of Nashville, but he also had kind of some strange stories. He had 3, 4, 5, 6 wives. He might have been a Spanish spy. He was a really interesting guy, but he ended up becoming kind of the grand old man of Nashville by the time Andrew Jackson was around. And, you know, his family today still has so many stories about him living in a cave and who's the father of what child, who's the mother.
Who is your dad?
He set the standard, Rich, pretty early on for Music Row's behavior.
Yeah,
it's really interesting.
He was married.
I'm writing another book about de Mumbrien right now, so it's very fitting.
He was married more than Tammy Wynette. He just did it all at the same time.
Yeah, he managed to get all those lives into one life, I suppose.
What's fascinating is to hear the story of some of these homes and buildings along Music Row in Nashville. And Vanessa, man, the story of the home built by Jacob Schnell and then the fate of Miss Bertha is a particularly interesting story.
I'm so glad that you asked about it and that you enjoy it. It's very spooky, and actually we got commissioned to write a second book called The Lost Music Row, where I've actually been discussing bringing a medium into the building and kind of seeing what spirits we can conjure with somebody who's a professional. And I actually know a songwriter friend here that happens to also be a medium. So I'm hoping she'll jump on board with us to kind of discover a little bit more under the skin of that house and that place, because it's pretty incredible. You know, ghost sightings are still said to have happened there. So it's really quite interesting and also very sad, and really speaks to how, unfortunately, racism and classism has always existed, and how very shunned and alone it can make people feel.
I remember going in there. This must have been the newer building. I was in there in the mid-80s when I was actually meeting with Paul Lovelace when he was at Capitol Records there back in the day. But even then, the whispers were going around about the things that one might hear in the wee small hours of the morning.
Absolutely. I mean, there were reports of things being thrown, telephone calls, and people would pick up and there wouldn't be anybody on the other line. You know, doors opening randomly, windows being left open that weren't left open the night before, people come into the office and find a window unlocked or open. Very, very interesting stuff there.
Rich, I'm jealous you got to go in right. That was must have been right when they built Capitol, right after that building came down and they built Capitol. So you probably had the strongest connection to versus ghosts. There.
Yeah, no question about that. Elizabeth Elkins, Vanessa Oliveris with us. Their book is Hidden History of Music Row, along with Brian Allison. Elizabeth, your chapter on the churches of Nashville and their story and their transformation through the years, very interesting, particularly the Home for the Aged Chapel, which was also the inspiration for the song Tiny Televisions, I assume.
Yeah, that's correct. That story, you know, that building when we first were introduced to it was the home of Sony Music. And it's a big turn of the century building that was the Little Sisters Home for the Poor, where the Catholic nuns took in the elderly who had nowhere else to go. By mid-century, it had become a series of nursing homes. And when the developer went in the building, he saw such a state of sort of terror and sadness with these folks. And many of the elderly were sitting on the floor of the chapel watching tiny televisions. And when I was interviewing for that chapter, and when he said that, it was such a stark and kind of a, you know, really startling phrase. And we got together with our friend Matt Nolan, who plays keys with us a good bit, and told him about that story, and that led to the song. And it sort of, we love to try to inhabit characters and think about what people might be thinking and feeling. So it's kind of a stream of consciousness / Pink Floyd-y kind of vibe, where we were just thinking, what, you know, if you're watching current events unfold on TV and you're just sort of all alone sitting on the floor of this very sacred space.
Feels like quarantine.
And it does. But, you know, it's ironic, Rich, because that became a place where so many number one parties for country songs were held over the years. So for a place to go from the sacred to, you know, the very terrible to celebration again, it's very much a story of so many spaces in Music Row.
There's been great music coming out of Nashville forever. Ken Burns told the wonderful story in his documentary, and then much of it starting with the radio station there back in the day. But the idea of Music City really didn't come around until the 1950s and early 60s. And then largely that was because of what we came to know as the Nashville sound, thanks to people like Owen and Harold Bradley, and of course later on Chet Atkins.
Absolutely. I mean, Music City, yeah. I mean, this was the place actually when the radio station first brought that hillbilly music down from, you know, East Tennessee. A lot of the Athens of the South was very unhappy to have these hillbillies in town. And, you know, my how times have changed.
It became a mecca as well in the 1960s for songwriters of every genre. And Elizabeth, your chapter on the work done there by Bob Dylan with Blonde on Blonde and other albums, Neil Young, Leonard Cohen, and so many more, taking advantage of those tremendous Nashville players.
Absolutely. You know, Leonard Cohen is perhaps my favorite songwriter of all time. And to know that he literally had given up after his first record deal, completely disillusioned by the industry. And someone at a party in L.A. says, hey, I've got this place near Nashville. You should just come hang on my farm. And Leonard kind of secretly revealed at that time that he wanted to be as good as the Nashville songwriters. And that this guy, who, of course, is such a songwriting genius, was inspired by Nashville and came here and ended up writing some of his most amazing works, you know, inspired and here in Tennessee.
Vanessa, loved your chapter on the outlaw movement, and I was especially thrilled to read the conversation you had with Chris Gantry. I've always admired his work, and it sounds like he was a really interesting guy to talk to.
He really, really is. What an eccentric and incredible human being with such a story to tell. He's really lived his truth and has just walked this amazing journey that he loves to talk about. So it was really wonderful to get together with him because I'm usually the talker, but in this case, I didn't have to be. So it was nice to have a little bit of a break and just listening to all of the magic that he's been fortunate to experience in his life and all of the wonderful characters that we know so well that he knew even better than we did. So just hearing those one-on-one stories were just, it was one of the most magical experiences of my life. And Chris is just a true troubadour, an amazing songwriter, and has become a friend now, and I'm very thankful for that.
There are so many dark stories in the history of Nashville, and I had no idea about the string of murders that happened there.
Yeah, and you know, Brian had written a previous book about a lot of crime and murder in Nashville, and he is just an incredible expert on that.
Specifically, yeah.
Yeah, and he had theorized for a while that there were one and perhaps two serial murders happening at various points during Music Row's history, and I think something people don't realize, and even people working here today, is that during the reason that country music moved into that neighborhood is because it was affordable. It was a very rundown neighborhood, not a desirable neighborhood. And the music industry was able to operate there because rent and buildings were so inexpensive. And you know, again, you're not always making money in the music business. So it was a lot of crime here. And I think that Brian really dives into that in one of his chapters, and it's a lot of stuff I didn't know, and he knows everything.
He's a true expert on anything murder in Music City. It's insane. He's an encyclopedia of death. So I would just say, if you want to know anything about that, he is your man. Gosh, I mean, amazingly educated in that respect.
And the story of the wonderful Thomas Hart Benton painting of the sources of country music that literally was not just the last thing that Benton did, but he died while working on it.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. And you know, Brian's father is a man named Joe Allison, who was pretty instrumental in convincing Thomas to paint that painting. So it's really, that chapter gets into stuff I didn't know anything about. And really, it was so amazing to get to collaborate with Brian, because he literally grew up surrounded by this beginning of country music, and he, you know, sitting around the dinner table with all these people at night. And it goes into how that painting happened, and of course Benton dying before completing it.
Well, Nashville is a songwriter's town, and you two can appreciate that more than most, and I loved the chapter on the stories behind the songs and your opportunity to talk with people behind some of the biggest songs in country music history, from Joe Allison to Matresa Berg and Jim McCormick and so many others. And it's great to hear those stories. And you talked as well about what that's like, that first time you write that song that somebody has a hit with, and you experience that joy of seeing it rise up the charts.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, we were very fortunate that Billy Currington cut one of our songs. It became a radio single, and it was. I have to say, it felt like one of the most exciting times of my life. It's something you work hard for so long. You know, you have half the town telling you they're going to make you $1 million, you're going to have a big number one, and then you're watching the chart, and it didn't get there. Our song got into the 20s, but it was so fun to keep an eye on the charts and to get invited to the listening parties and just sort of feel like, oh, my gosh, we've almost made it. So it is a rush that people we know that have had multiple number ones, but it just never gets old. It's so fun to see something you created all of your life actually take on its own little journey like that. So it was pretty awesome. And we were fortunate that so many of our friends and folks we've worked with were willing to tell the stories of how those big songs happened.
Yeah, we were very fortunate to be in the circle that we're in and have so many friends that have been so successful in the industry. I'm already, like, as this conversation is happening, thinking about the next time we have to do this and who I want to interview. I didn't think about Wynn Marble. Yeah.
what is it about Nashville's history that you're fascinated by and inspires you?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think for me, you know, and one thing that makes this book interesting, Rich, is that Brian is a true Nashvillean, second, third generation Nashvillean. And Vanessa and I are both outsiders. We've been in town on and off for 10 or 15 years, but only lived here permanently for about six. And to see it, you know, you see the glitz and the glamour and you hear all these amazing stories, but you start diving in and I think, you know, get really trying to find the truth in the music industry. And it's just kind of fascinating. You know, this is it's a really interesting place. I joke that it's like Portland throwing up on Birmingham, which some people laugh at. Some people just stare at me and I've offended them, but it is a clash of two very different kind of cultures right now. It's a small southern city, but it's also trying to be a big international town. And the history of it is fascinating. The French, the Spanish, the English, you know, 7 or 8 different native tribes. And you have a real legacy of the civil rights movement here that people are just now really starting to turn their attention to. And, of course, you know, an entire genre of music sort of coming to fruition in this town. So it's fascinating. And you never run out of stories.
No, you don't. It's insane. Just when you think you've heard the last one, something else pops up. And people are very eager to talk about it, but also very closed-mouthed about it, oddly. I mean, there's such a cast of characters to protect here, and people are very protective of their friends and don't really want to willingly give any incriminating information of any kind.
Oh, almost every interview, the person I was talking to would say, okay, now that we're off the record, let me tell you a few things. And so I thought, well, there's all the great stuff. But, yeah, very protective, very family-like, just very different. You know, I think both of us lived in Atlanta, Georgia for a long time, and it's very different towns. It's one of those, it's like falling in love, you know, with someone you know that probably isn't the best for you. Just keep going back for more and finding something else that hooks you. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a wonderful read, Hidden History of Music Row, Kix Brooks with a great foreword. It's out now from the History Press, and check out as well the terrific EP from Granville Automatic, Tiny Televisions as well. Elizabeth Vanessa, wonderful to talk with you. Great work, and look forward to seeing more and hearing more wonderful music from you.
Oh, thank you so much. It was wonderful to talk to you as well.
Thanks, Rich. We're glad to be here.
Elizabeth Elkins, Vanessa Oliveras with us on Downtown.